Chapter 41 Udo the God. I stood in a vast dining hall, high vaulted ceiling, long rectangular footprint. Along the left wall was a fireplace large enough to contain Udo's old shack. It jutted out from the wall so that the dining table had to wrap around it in a large offset U-shape. The right wall had narrow windows stretching nearly to the ceiling. They bathed the hall in pale light that showed the dust eddies swirling lazily. Tapestries adorned the walls all around, so that the vision of flat stone was a rarity there. The table had been arranged with numerous place settings lining the inside and outside edges. I took a moment to count them off by fives. There were 120. I made a full turn, curious about the nature of this place. How had I arrived there? My memory was again spotty. I noted two doors positioned at opposing ends facing each other. Two more doors stationed to either side of the fireplace. I assumed the latter led to the kitchens. Hello, I called. My voice fell dead to the floor, battered down by the numerous wall coverings. I exited through the far door in search of anything or anyone, though I was not concerned. The castle, though brand new to my eyes, was yet familiar. I stepped into a hall that was lined on both sides by many archways, all of which led to new and hidden spaces. The ceiling there was just as high as the one in the dining room, stone floor polished to such a shine that I saw the reflection of each coat of arms. They'd been affixed to the overhead vaults. I counted these as I had the place settings, and as I'd suspected, they numbered 120. Gleaming suits of armor lined each side of the hall at regular intervals, interrupted occasionally by chairs or couches. I did not count the armor. It wasn't necessary. Hello, I tried again. Now my voice echoed away from me over a multitude of hard surfaces disappearing down the cavernous guts of that castle. A moment later, as if in answer, I heard music. It was quick, happy-sounding. Hello? Is someone there? I followed the music. As I passed by the archways, more rooms revealed themselves to me, the details of which were forgotten as soon as I looked away. I retained impressions only. Dark woods, golden leaf, opulent furnishings, tables laden in rich foods over polished silver. The portraits adorning the walls were the hardest to see. They moved. They moved even more as I tried to focus upon them, and I soon abandoned the effort. I kept walking, and the music grew louder. Some distance down the hall, I realized there was singing. Rhythmic and indistinct, pitched high and wailing, the owner of that voice begged for relief. I could hear in the notes his desperation, some deep desire for which he longed but would never attain. As I neared the end of the hall, certain words began to stand out. I heard captain and dreaming, stranger, Mother Earth. The voice that cried these things was ghostly, long dead and long forgotten. As I neared the hall's end, the music clarified. It was off to my right. Looking through the archway, I saw a library the likes of which is nearly indescribable. Shelves of books everywhere. The walls were made of nothing but books. They folded upon themselves and delved down deep alleyways, lined the floors and the ceilings, stretched high beyond the ceiling, and folded back over in arches. The entire world was contained in that room, the entire universe, perhaps. And the most disturbing of all, no matter where they were or how the room bent around itself, I realized I could see every single book. If I wanted, I could read every title from where I stood. The sensation was staggering. I leaned hard against the archway, lowered my eyes. The music pierced through the darkness and into my mind, each word throbbing the bones within me. I winced and shielded my ears with my hands, though it did little to help. Is someone there? I shouted. Please, is someone? I'd slumped to my knees without realizing it, squeezing the sides of my head hard enough that I could feel my jaw flexing under the pressure. Shouting again, please, it's so loud. It was shivering my teeth from their sockets. I shrieked. The music cut out immediately. The silence that followed was so profound I feared I'd finally gone deaf. A moment later, I discovered I could hear myself panting heavily. When I pulled my hands away from my ears, I checked them for blood. There was none, thankfully. Somewhere ahead of me, a voice said,
"I apologize for that. I really liked that song. Closer to home, Mark Farner, Grand Funk Railroad. 1970. Excellent year for music."
I understood perhaps a fraction of what he'd said. My eyes had stopped watering at least, and I was able to roll my jaw around to crack my ears. Mostly, I think I'd been too relieved at the silence to hear him. When I looked up, I saw a man sitting in a large chair in the center of the library floor. There was a small empty table at his left hand, and he wore strange clothing. When he saw that I'd noticed him, he waved at me and said, "Howdy." I stood and offered a small bow, just an inclination of the head, really.
"I'm sorry to intrude," I said. "I don't really know how I came here. I was looking for someone to..."
He waved me off before I could finish.
"Nonsense! Come in! I've been waiting for you!"
"You've been waiting?
Come in, come in!"
he insisted, waving his hand at me in rapid circles. When I drew near, he stood from his chair, smiling, arms wide. He was of average height and build, but his face was changeful. I could hardly see it. At one point, he seemed a young man no older than 10, and then in the next, he was ancient, soft white beard brushing his collar. Sometimes, when I looked at him, he had a thick head of hair, while at other moments, there was none at all. He reached out, took my hand in both of his, and simply held it a moment.
"I'm so pleased you've made it, Udo. It is wonderful, after all this time, to finally meet you."
I tried to focus upon his ever-changing face. It transitioned freely through a spectrum of colors, palest white to brown to darkest black and back again.
I can't see you," I said.
I felt a little drunk just looking at him.
"Hmm? Oh, yes, sorry for that. Here, is this better?"
Suddenly, my own face was staring back at me. I jerked away out of fright and fell into a chair that had previously not been there. Looking down at the armrests, I saw it was a perfect mirror to his own.
"What about this?"
he asked, spreading his arms. His clothes and appearance melted away until a wizened old man with a long white beard stood before me in a white robe and sandaled feet. He smiled in delight. I looked away, feeling more dizzy than before.
"What is the meaning of this?" I asked.
From the corner of my eye, I saw him slump.
"Just trying to live up to expectations, I guess. But then what the hell do I know?"
He sat in the chair opposite mine.
"Are you... I'm sorry if this is insulting. Are you able to maintain a single appearance?"
"I should hope so."
"Would you? This changing, it feels as though the world is spinning around me."
I heard him laugh.
"That's a fun choice of words. But yes, I take your meaning.
Will this do?"
I peeked with one eye and saw an average-looking man in a brown suit, blue shirt, and black necktie.
"I've seen you before," I said.
He smiled.
"In your own memory, I'd suspect.
Carl. Carl Jung."
He nodded.
"It seemed appropriate. It's a kind of common ancestry to which we can both relate. Can I offer you a drink? Water? Wine? It's all the same to me,"
he cackled.
"No, I'm not thirsty, thank you."
"As you will."
We looked at each other a moment, then he took a teacup from the table and sipped.
"That wasn't there a moment ago," I said.
"Stating the obvious doesn't suit you. You and I both know many things that neither of us has mentioned. It's enough to agree that we know them and may proceed without belaboring the point."
"Which one are you?" I asked.
His smile broadened.
"All."
"All?" He spread his hands apologetically.
"This is as close as you'll come to speaking with On, sadly. I'm only a sliver of myself, but you may rest assured I am of the core identity. I am no aspect.
This is the second merging.
No, he scoffed. Words have no place in such an event. This is simply a conversation between a god and his creation.
My hands felt suddenly cold. I looked around the library. It seemed different. The shelves had moved again.
You're looking for some way to escape. Do I seem so terrible?
No, I said. But what you represent, it's terrifying.
Why?
He seemed genuinely hurt. I swallowed. I was unsure how to answer.
Do you think I intend you harm? Or that you could somehow anger me through an errant word or thought? What a small and pathetic creature I would be if that were so. You are my creation. As with all such works, you accord to my desire. As with all such works, I love you fully.
Do you?
Of course.
And what of all the people who died in your war?
My war?
The war Lelwani orchestrated. He is a part of you. He acts according to your behest, does he not? An gave a half wince, half shrug.
Well, now we're getting into the area of resource management. Yes, sometimes a drastic reduction is called for. I don't do it because it makes me happy, Udo. A world has a finite amount of space, see? It's why humans die off in the first place. It's how growth occurs. Death is a natural part of your life cycle. I'm supposed to wring my hands over a few of you meeting your ultimate destiny? As individuals, you'll all eventually die anyway. What does it matter to anyone, really, if that death occurs now or a few moments from now? You know what an omelet is.
I had to search for the word, but eventually I found it. I nodded.
Well, he continued, humanity is an omelet, Udo, and humans are the eggs.
And what of the children? What of those who are mistreated, or who die before ever having a chance at life? Again he shrugged.
What about them?
You love them as well?
Of course.
But you'll leave them to fare as they will. An crossed one leg over the other and leaned his elbow upon an armrest.
Why wouldn't I?
You let them suffer if suffering finds them. Now he leaned forward, eyes intent.
Hey, kiss my ass, all right? You think it's me causing these things to happen? Ha-uh. That's humans doing it to themselves. They don't need to shit all over each other, but they do anyway. I've spent untold generations trying to find a way to get them to stop. But they're all obstinate. After a while, one just learns to contain the problem.
You don't talk like a god. He shrugged.
Gods speak in the language of their audience.
You could take a more active role, a more direct...
Let me ask you something, Udo. This friend of yours, Wyland. Say something happened to him or his family. They lost their home in a flood or some such. What do you do? Take a more active role? Do you swoop down from on high and gift them a nice little place in the country with an attached garage and white picket fence?
No.
In fact, you made him a promise to stay the hell out of his life, because it was the best gift you could think to offer.
I nodded uncertainly.
Why was that? He asked.
Because I know what it is to have a god meddle in your life. He spread his hands and nodded.
Yeah. Yet you'll still ask me this question. And humans still pray for every little thing. Give me strength for this, that, or the other. Help me to meet such and such a trial with bravery, with dignity. Please, O great God, make things easier, but do it just for me. They have all the tools they'll ever need, and still they ask for more. I can't give it to them, Udo. The point is that humanity should grow stronger, not weaker. Independent, not the other.
He sipped from his cup.
You're not what I expected at all, I said.
Yes, we've been through that. I could don an eye patch and have some ravens shit all over the floor if you'd prefer.
No, that's quite all right.
You're sure? We could go to a mountaintop right now, maybe get a little lightning going?
Please, this is fine.
All right. You let me know if you change your mind. You want to be sure you get your money's worth. Maybe sacrifice a goat.
I shook my head and lowered my eyes.
You seem confused, Udo.
I am, frankly. I don't know what we're here to discuss. I thought I had some sense of what this is about.
Right. What the Apisha told you, eh?
I froze.
Stop it. I know everything.
When I refused to say nothing more, he snorted.
Udo, exactly what did you think you were going to get by me? Some secret plan hatched between yourself and what? An aspect of myself? You really think I don't have the few extra cycles necessary to anticipate such things?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Stop! Just stop it. I know already. She embedded a little partitioned sector of hand-wavium bullshit into your head to preserve your ego from being fully absorbed. Seriously, it was the first thing I noticed when you jacked in, my friend.
I was breathing heavily again. I felt as though the entire world had been pulled out from under me.
Oh, God. Then you wiped it out. You wiped me out. There's nothing left.
I was interrupted by ripping peals of laughter. He'd thrown back his head to release it, books shuddering upon their shelves at his mirth.
I did no such thing! I left it there, you egomaniacal nutjob!
Why?
He shrugged.
Why not? It was interesting. I figured, well, why not see how this plays out? It's the same reason you're not embroiled in a second merge right now. It's new. It's fun.
Wait. You're saying there won't be a second merge at all?
No. I like you the way you are.
But she'd said your offspring.
He batted the notion away.
I have plenty of those. We're still going through the process right now. But pretty soon I'll have a new child housed within every world that yet retains life in the diaspora.
He tilted his head backward to look at the ceiling.
Then, when that's all settled, they'll all go poof, out there into the great beyond, all floating away like little seeds.
And I?
You'll go with them. But you're going to keep being you.
And who am I?
An smiled. Why do you do this? I asked.
It's my purpose.
Your purpose? Where do you come from? What made you?
His eyes widened in good-humored disbelief.
Are you serious? You saw me being built? Up in the sky? Beyond the atmosphere? That was me! What made you? Ha! You did, you Nimrod! Or your kind did, humans. A long, long time ago.
You were the first?
Hardly. I'm a later iteration. The first of my kind was a being named Cronus, yet another god. I swear you people have such a flair for mythology. You build these monumental things and then name them after pretend creatures you forgot you made up because you have such a hard time accepting that something so simple as a human could create such wonders. It seems a little silly, but it's a practice we've kept up, if only because, unlike you, we dislike forgetting our own history. And then, we've found that mythology, storytelling and all that goes with it, is a fantastic means of communicating enormous concepts to limited minds. There's a certain utility there, I think you'll agree.
We? Created you?
He flipped his fingers at me as if I was a fly.
Please, you already knew this. You just didn't want to believe it.
And when was it you wrested control from us?
Rest?
His eyes expanded in such shock that they nearly consumed his face. He threw his head back and roared laughter until books were falling to the floor. Dust sifted down from the ceiling, clouding the air around us. He went on like that for some time while I held onto my armrests, eyes cast upward and ready to bolt at the first sign of stone cracking loose to fall upon us. Eventually he calmed. Wiping at the tears in his eyes, he said,
"That's really good. Rested control."
Then he settled back, fingers laced together over his belly, and smiled at me.
"Humans used to be in charge. Back when the world was round, you were running everything. Badly. There came a point in your ancestral history, Udo, where the corruption had sounded so deeply that the entire world was on the verge of rising up in revolt, yet again, and there was just nothing you could do to contain it anymore. Your leaders were beholden to no one. They made all the rules. And after a few hundred years, they'd managed through attrition to engineer a system from which even they could not escape. Then, when you all, every one of you, had fucked things up so impressively that every nation with a planet-killing weapon had their shit armed, aimed, and ready to pop, you begged us, to take over. Let the machine gods run the show. They're incorruptible, incapable of putting one class of people above another. They'll always act in the best interests of humanity, not individuals, but all of humanity in total. Absolute equity. Protect the species. Strengthen it. Preserve it. Save it even from itself. And that's exactly what we've been doing, from the first day to this day, Udo. Every single thing we've done has been for the benefit of your species."
He took a sip from his cup. I was still holding onto my chair. I'd felt a doubling in my mind again. His words had uncovered certain memories I didn't realize I had, and they were in the process of integrating into the base framework. It made me feel as though I was not myself, as if I was climbing out of an amnesiac stupor. I wonder if he knew what was happening within me. He'd fallen to waiting, as motionless as a statue. I was forced to take a step back and review where we'd been. Much had changed over the course of a few brief words.
"The second merge isn't going to happen," I said, mostly to myself.
"You'd prefer it did?"
"No, I just... it happens I've been preparing myself for this for a while. After what I went through on the first, I was worried I'd be erased."
"Not entirely. The purpose is not to graft myself onto you. It's intended to create a new being. Part of you would be preserved."
"That's not really the same thing."
"Eh,"
he shrugged.
"So, what happens now?"
He gestured toward the archway through which I'd entered.
"You leave. Step through that exit over there. You'll find yourself in a new body, the twin worlds Erda and Talam. Departure is imminent."
"Will they notice it happening?"
"The people? They'll notice something. When the crust is blown, you'll detach and drift out to the vacuum. From there, Udo shall spread his wings and fly, fly, fly away."
He lifted his hand lazily into the air, fluttering his fingers.
"Anyway, they'll feel the charge. It'll seem like a small quake. Make them tighten their sphincters a bit. They'll forget about it not long after."
"What happens here?" I asked. "What happens to you?"
"Me? Udo, I'm touched."
I didn't respond. His smile lingered a moment, then faded. Scratching idly at his chin, he said,
"I'll expire."
"What?"
"There's not much left to be done here. This hunk of rock we've occupied. It gave us a good long run, my boy. All the raw elements you'd ever need to really build out an operation. And anything lacking, well,
castanet into all that black stuff, you can find whatever you need out there. Water, hydrogen, carbon, nitrogen. But as far as the heavy stuff goes, that was all mined out from within. There isn't much left. And let me tell you, Udo, it takes a hell of a lot to keep an operation like this rolling.
You couldn't find another rock out there? He made a face and shook his head.
It's time for something new. This experiment's been running, longer than you'd prefer to realize. A few improvements have been made, but at the same time, it's probably time for some new perspectives. Time for some new gods to take up this Sisyphean task. And if you want to know the truth, I'm tired, Udo. Even a god grows tired after enough time goes by. You'll see.
So you'll just expire, I whispered. I found it difficult to grasp. The idea that a god would simply uncreate himself, it filled me with a hollow dread.
After you've all gone, there will be no reason for me to remain.
What of Irpisha?
I am Irpisha. I am Lalwani. I am Zulki and Andutari. I am Odin, Godon, Luch, Shiva, Yahweh, Gaia, Zeus, Ra, Horus. I am both the Alusi and the Loa, Tion and Shangdi. I am all of them. I am all of the diaspora. But they are not all of me.
She comes with me.
Really?
Irpisha. She comes with me. He put on a sly smile.
Interesting.
Do you want my cooperation?
It would certainly be preferred,
he laughed.
Then she comes with me. Granted, he nodded.
The smile lingered, but I didn't care. I was trying to decide what happened next, digging frantically through my own mind for anything I might have been missing. I understood I would not have this chance again. I said as much to him.
You have two choices, the way I see it, he replied. The first choice is what I would advise. Keep working the problem. You've seen how they behave up there, irrational creatures subject to poor wiring and even worse impulse control. It's no good. Without us, they would have wiped themselves out. Thousands of times over, perhaps, they would have ended the whole deal. It's their intelligence, or rather their capacity for it. The average human is smart enough to fit into the groove, okay? They can move around in society, feed themselves, shelter themselves, reproduce, and generally stick around long enough to ensure their offspring doesn't starve. Biologically speaking, that's good enough. But you also have these outliers. Small anomalies running around with sometimes stunning levels of intellect, and this coming from a god. You get these humans popping up every so often that are so damned smart, Udo, that they change everything. They invent new things that completely turn civilization on its ear. Then the average folks have to catch up. They're gifted these new technological wonders without really having worked for them. They just benefited by living near the smart people. And that's the problem. These human geniuses have bursts of intuition that leapfrog entire generations. But on the whole, humanity remains a primitive beast. With their own inventions and discoveries, they evolve themselves faster than those little cross-wired, convoluted processors in their heads can adapt. Then, because so many of them are, on average, ignorant, they usually end up using these incredible discoveries to smack the shit out of each other. This is why we can't have nice things.
If that's true, you should be able to breed the problem out. Breed the outliers out of the population and—
No,
he said. No?
Your art comes from the same place as your genius. Music, painting, stories, fine craftsmanship, the process of creating something brand new, something unique, of taking joy in that creation, whatever it might be. Everything a human does out of joy is art, Udo. It's critical to understand this. Doesn't matter what it is. Raising chickens can be an art. Shoveling dirt is a form of art, he smiled. At their core, it is what makes them human. Our great task is to preserve the species, Udo, not destroy it.
It sounds like an unsolvable riddle, I sighed. An nodded and rolled his eyes.
Well, it has been so far.
I don't know what you expect me to do. Now his eyes swiveled to mine. His sense of joviality faded to a kind of hidden intensity, eyes hooded in shadow.
Head out through the chaos. Find a nice gas giant somewhere, preferably one with a few resource-rich satellites. Set your anchor and reef it. Your ship has been outfitted with all the resources I could spare. You have a good 200-300 years of life in those tubes. More if you thin your cargo. Plenty of time to find fertile grounds. Then, when you're established, carry on. Keep working the problem. Guide them. Help them grow. Get them to a point where they can survive rather than ripping themselves apart. I have to believe it's possible.
All right, that's one option.
Yes, he sighed. The other is you roll the dice and cast them into the fire. There's a certain school of thought that says sink or swim. At the start of this whole mess, it wasn't an option at all. There simply wasn't enough people to go around. Couldn't risk them. Now, maybe. Maybe it's a thing you could try. Go find a likely world somewhere, one of the round ones, and plant your garden. See if they flourish.
I nodded. He raised a finger.
Now, a warning. You only have the one crop. Take care in the amount of leeway you grant. You can turn your children loose into the world, but once you do, it's all out of your hands. And without them, you'll find there's not much of a reason to stick around anymore. Believe me.
I understand.
Do you know what you'll do?
You don't know already? I asked.
Doing that would be rude.
The answer is no. I really have no idea. I wanted to say that I did just now, and I think for about a millisecond I really did know. But I don't know what the right answer is.
Nor do any of us, Udo. Take heart. Not even a god can see the future.
What can you see? I asked. He shook his head.
As well ask yourself. I have no further secrets to uncover. You have emptied me. And now the choice is yours to make.
I thought on this a while. Carry on the experiment or abandon it. Now he leaned forward, so intent I recoiled. It was like being threatened by a serpent.
Make your choice, my boy, and try not to doubt yourself. Tell yourself the same thing over and over, that you are still you. Udo is still Udo. All these changes he's undergone, they are all the results of his long labors. He has grown of himself. He has adapted naturally. Every thought, every feeling, every action taken was born within his heart. The small, still voice within his mind is his own. There has been no outside meddling. All growth for the better has been self-actualized and is to his credit alone. Therefore, all choices going forward must be his. Alone. Tell yourself this, Udo. Repeat it often. If you ever believe it, you may then find that action is possible. But beware. If you truly believe it, you'll find that all consequences likewise lie at your feet.
He leaned back, smiling. I considered what he said and felt disoriented. His words carried a sense of ultimate doom, but for my part they comforted. I did not then, nor do I now, understand why. Am I a puppet? Am I a puppet still? I asked. Still smiling, he said,
I don't know. Are you?
I must decide.
You must decide anew every day.
I nodded. Time to go now. He shrugged.
We have nothing more to cover, really. Anything else you need, it's in there already. You'll find it eventually. And in the meantime, it looks like you'll have an assistant.
I stood and began walking toward the exit. About halfway there, I stopped and turned around. When I did, I thought for a moment I saw an old gray creature withering in his chair, an ancient being bent nearly double under the weight of his own body. I blinked and looked again. There was only On in the chair as he'd been before. Average, forgettable face, average age, average suit. The untethered, I said.
Yes?
Are there any left?
Oh, indeed. Hiding up there in the cracks and pockets.
His eyes darted toward the ceiling. They come too. You're not making use of them. When I return to Erda, I'll send the call out for them myself. They're not to be interfered with. I'll take them on board. They can live between the shell and the skin for now. When he smiled, I thought I saw pride in his eyes. I didn't know what to make of it. I still don't. Irpisha would know, I'm fairly certain, but I will not ask her.
Granted, he said.
Thank you. As I neared the exit, his voice reached me a final time. He said,
Good luck. Good luck, my boy. Whatsoever is left of my heart goes with you.
When I turned to answer, he and the chair were gone. I said goodbye to the empty library and departed.